Welcome to the Geekcentric Podcast, and welcome to our spoiler-free review for Dead Boy Detectives. Allow me to welcome you to the Dead Boy Detective Agency. Welcome to the Geekcentric Podcast. My name is Nate, and this is our spoiler-free review for Dead Boy Detectives. Special thanks, as always, to our friends at Netflix Canada for letting us watch this series early for review. If you're joining us for the first time, we are Geekcentric, a podcast focused on the world of movies, TV shows, video games, and all things geek-centric. Joining me for this spirited review, he's a dematerialized demon who's always down for some dastardly deeds. He's Darcy, the happy haunting Hudson.
Hello, hello. How's it going?
How are you? How's the haunting going?
It's going all right. I'm on the road for work right now, so I'm haunting some new areas and everything like that. But I'm good.
I can imagine you haunting. It's like, it just smells like a lot of weed. What's going on? What does that smell right now? It just creeps
in.
Yeah,
pretty much. Yeah, the smell will roll in before I do, usually.
Oh man. Well, I mean, kind of on that topic, and I mean, you're traveling. Hopefully, you're not in like a haunted hotel or anything, but before we dive into this review, I want to know, you know, obviously you're a huge fan of another, you know, ghostly tale from Disney, the Haunted Mansion, but I don't think we've ever talked about this before. Do you believe in ghosts? Do you think ghosts are among us?
I mean, I'm open to the idea of ghosts being among us, that's for sure, because they're, in the ways that they're depicted as being friendly, I'm all for it, but there's also a lot of ways that they're depicted as being not so friendly.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm if they're happy, Casper or even the ghost from the Haunted Mansion, sure, sign me up for that. Yeah. But that's about where I draw the line, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's funny because, like, you know, we just had a new Ghostbusters movie and, you know, we talked about the Haunted Mansion and there was a movie for that one. And I think like you, I'm open to the idea that they exist, but I feel like we might be more obsessed with them than they are of us. Like, I feel like the word misunderstanding probably adheres to like every encounter with ghosts that's ever happened, where people are like humans, living people are like, oh man, it must mean this, oh, this painting fell over. It must mean this. And meanwhile, it's just like, they just knocked it over by mistake. I don't know.
Yeah, I just bumped into it and I was walking down the hall. You do that sometimes.
Yeah, I just imagine like ghosts just being like, why are you so obsessed with me? Like, just, but listen, before death comes for us, let's get into the synopsis for this series. Do you have a pesky ghost haunting you? Has a demon stolen your core memories? You may want to ring the Dead Boy Detectives. Meet Edwin Payne and Charles Rowland, the brains and the brawn behind the Dead Boy Detective Agency. Teenagers born decades apart who find each other only in death. Edwin and Charles are best friends and ghosts who solve mysteries. They will do anything to stick together, including escaping evil witches, hell, and even death herself. With the help of a clairvoyant named Crystal and her friend Nico, they are able to crack some of the mortal realm's most mystifying paranormal cases. As part of the Sandman universe for Netflix and based on the beloved comic series from Neil Gaiman, Dead Boy Detectives was developed for television by Steve Yoki, who serves as co-showrunner alongside Beth Schwartz, and is brought to you by Greg Berlanti, Jeremy Carver, and Sarah Schecher. Also serve as executive producers. The series stars George Rexdrew, Jaden Reverie, Cassius Nelson, Jen Leon, Brianna Cuoco, Ruth Connell, Yuyu Kitamura, Lucas Gage, and David Iacono. And it's on Netflix right now, as of if you're listening to this on the day we released it. I don't know how, if you, maybe you will want to watch it after we give our thoughts, maybe you won't. But let's dive into this, Darcy, what kind of worked and what didn't work. And I, you know, I always like to start on the lighter side of things so that, you know, some scary ghosts don't show up. So I want to start by talking about this cast. I think that's the best thing about this series. I think
definitely like the characters in the locations, I think, is where the series Signs. Yeah. Not only do they do a great job of really embodying these characters, but the places you're taken to and the landscapes and locales you get to go on look so good and feel so realistic. And they feel like lived in, which is something we always like to talk about. When something feels lived in, it feels good. But these characters, again, are probably the standout thing from this series.
Yeah, I think the characters and especially their performances. I don't know if the characters would have grown on me as much if it wasn't for these performances. I want to call out Jaden Reverie, who plays Charles. I thought he was Brills, which is a thing he says a lot in the show, but with a British accent. And I think I think for me he gives the most well-rounded of the performances. I think he's a comedic relief a lot of the times, but his character is also grounded in a lot of pain, and we get to see that in his performance. And I think playing a character that's both kind of meant to be in the forefront, in front of, you know, in everyone's face, but at the same time hiding, is not an easy thing to portray, but I thought he nailed it.
Yeah, 100%. He does a great job. Again, like you said, providing that comedic bite when he needs to, but the fact that we get almost a look behind as to why he's doing that, and the performance he gives during those moments where he goes to a darker place is just fantastic. And the fact that he does, again, it's almost like a flip of the switch almost, where you'll go from a scene where he's making a joke, and then all of a sudden you understand why the jokes are coming and why he's so heavy-handed with them sometimes. It's really good job. I loved it.
Yeah, I think this cast is great. Like, I like when it feels like we're almost kind of like discovering all these new wonderful actors, because a lot of these folks, as far as I'm aware, I haven't really seen in too many projects. Another standout performance for me, and character, I think she was my favorite character, is Yuyu Kitamura as Nico.
100%.
Is just so charming, so delightful. I enjoyed her arc in the show quite a bit. I think she gave me vibes of almost like if you combine Mantis and Drax from the Guardians of the Galaxy, like together as one sort of character. Yeah, she's my favorite.
I love that. I love that comparison. The empath who doesn't understand literal humor type yes. thing. And she's great. She plays that eccentric oddball so well and is almost instantly you're drawn to her. And then as you get to peel back those layers to this character, there's just more and more to like about her. And that just, she does a great job of bringing her to life. So yeah, again, one of my favorite characters as well.
I think she kind of steals the scenes that she's in, to be honest with you. But we've also got Cassius Nelson, who plays Crystal in the show. Also very dynamic in her performance. I think, in my mind, she's kind of the vessel for the audience to learn more. And I think she did a great job with that as well.
Yeah. Again, the fact that they gave her more than just being your standard vessel, where you do want to, root for the character by the end of it when you learn more of her story.
Sure,
so, and again, that's another testament to how much Cassius brings to the role. And it's really, really good performance.
And then I got to talk about Edwin. George Rextrew plays Edwin, who, according to IMDb, again, really, I think this is like the first role for Edwin. And I thought he was great. Kind of this contrast to Charles. Charles is like this like punk rock, hit him with a cricket bat kind of guy. And then Edwin is the brains. He's the intellectual, prim and proper.
From 1916. Yes. So like, yeah, he definitely brings that old timey vibe to the character really well. Yeah. You feel like he's a teenager from, again, the early 1900s. It really comes across.
And I think it's great, given that gap in time, they've got kind of a really fun sort of running gag where, either Charles or Crystal, like, they have to fill him in because he's just not, aware.
Doesn't know what they're talking about. Yeah.
Which is funny because, again, his character is kind of like the I know everything kind of character. So to see a character who is kind of in the realm of a Sherlock Holmes, to see a character like him not knowing something and having to like kind of like learn about it it was fun. It was fun to see. And I think that's kind of, I think there are some other, good people in this cast. Was there anyone else that you wanted to shout out before we keep going here?
I mean, not really. Again, these core four are really the ones who stand out. I mean, Brianna Cuoco does a great job with Jenny the Butcher, mm-hmm. but you don't really spend enough time with her to get that attachment that you do with, again, these four that are in every episode. So, yeah, and again, the whole cast is great, but they aren't given the time they deserve because a lot of time is spent developing the four that we've already talked about.
Yeah, yeah, and I think I did want to call out the visuals. So you had mentioned, these locations and these places that feel lived in. The show shot in Canada, specifically Langley, British Columbia, which is funny because technically it takes place in Port Townsend, which is in Washington. And there's a Langley, Washington, which is like a 2-hour drive from Port Townsend. So it's just kind of funny how it all sort of worked out. I don't know where the inspiration might have come from. But I would agree with you for a lot of the indoor locations, as well as the forest locations, I guess you would say.
Mm. Those are what I'm thinking of when I'm talking about locations, I guess.
Yeah, there is a heavy use of green screen in certain instances. And, you know, I think there's as far as the visuals in general, I think the rule of thumb is if, you know, speaking of Neil Gaiman's other work on, you know, with Netflix, with The Sandman, if the visuals in The Sandman didn't bother you, then you'll be fine in this series. But I think for me, they still did. I think you're pretty much getting Sandman level visuals, but with more color. And I will say I appreciated that from the youthful nature of the characters, kind of, you know, bringing up that vibe and that tone of sort of that, you know, punk rock sort of aesthetic at times. I thought that worked for it to kind of differentiate it from The Sandman, which this is in that universe. But it's one of those things where every time I would see a heavy amount of CG being used, it just kind of, like, whether it was for like a creature or like an entity, I just was consistently taken out of the show because there were so many moments where I would see it and they're very creative. Like, they look fantastic and you can tell that they're pulling this from, you know, the comics. Right. But so much of me just sort of would see it and think to myself, this would look so much better in a comic book or drawn or in a, you know, in a way that's maybe not necessarily animated for live action, if you will.
Yeah, I totally get that. But again, you're talking to a longtime fan of Doctor Who, which is notorious for having some of the shoddiest CG out there.
For sure.
And to me, as long as the story's good, I'm willing to look past the CG. But I think, to me, that's where this series kind of lost me, was the you were talking about the boyish, you know, kind of charm that they were getting and giving from the color. To me, that's where they dropped the ball, is that what made this original series and these original characters from The Sandman so special was it was a couple of 12-year-old boys who had the dream of being detectives type thing. And it was a kind of very much like a Hardy Boys or Nancy Drew kid detective, but they're ghosts and it's in the macabre and very, you know, tongue-in-cheek dark humor type stuff. And I really enjoyed that. Whereas this show kind of seemed to have dropped the ball. It almost, I feel like they almost CW'd it.
Okay. Yeah.
It feels like very much like the Archie and Riverdale treatment as well, where they really just went hard for that certain demographic and then lost a lot of that charm that made me love the original series, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because I think we look at what Netflix has in terms of what I would imagine they're pointing this show towards as an audience. I mean, originally this was meant for HBO. This was, I think, meant to be a Max series, and it fell through, and then Neil, you know, worked with Netflix to bring it over there. And, you know, you look at Netflix's other series that kind of, I think, again, that they're going for here with Wednesday or current Stranger Things. But then I think back to first season of Stranger Things, right? Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, done really, really well with a younger cast. And it does kind of make you, you know, given your description from the original comics, kind of makes you yearn for something like that.
Yeah, that's honestly, to me, that was the biggest issue with this thing. And it's like, the entire time you're watching the show, it didn't really know what it was trying to be throughout the story. Did it want to be this really dark, gritty mystery? Did it want to be the quirky, almost Dirk Gently style spin on detectives? And then, are we going to just deal with ghosts or issue of the week type thing? It was really, I didn't know, it was hard to find its footing. So it took a while for me to really grow on these characters. And it was really the characters that kept me watching, not so much the story.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of, I would say that's my biggest issue with it as well, is that, you know, this is set in the world of the Sandman, but short of a couple cameos, it doesn't really spend too much time even kind of trying to focus on that, which again is fine if you give a story that can work really well on its mm-hmm. own. And, you know, I think it's trying to do a lot, right? It's trying to be, like you said, it's a procedural drama, but then it's also a mystery of the week. And there's these little tidbits that they sort of put in that is just all part of this convoluted, I guess subplot. Again, it's tough to sort of know what is the main plot and what is mm-hmm. the subplot with the way that this show presents itself. And I think, yeah, I want to explore the inner workings of these characters, but I just think this is a really good example of how difficult it can be to translate from one storytelling medium to another.
Yes.
Right? Where maybe they only had one. They thought, oh, we only have one season and we really don't know if we're going to get another one. Maybe the complications with going to HBO and then to Netflix, maybe during production. I don't know. And so, you know, I think with a lot of these shows, you never know if you're going to get a second season. And so maybe there was kind of an urge there to sort of say, well, we really need to tell the entirety of these characters' backstories in this show. And I really think that got in the way.
Mm-hmm. It does. It feels, they kind of slap you in the face with it when you do get those backstory exposition dumps. It's not earned. They're just like,
yeah.
And now you're going to get this little side story for a bit and be thrown off because you were really getting into the mystery, and then we're just going to take you right out of that for a second to go something that wasn't like necessary. They didn't need to be explicit, at least at this point in the storytelling
yeah.
stage. So yeah, it didn't know what it was trying to be. I feel like that's what its biggest issue was when it comes to story. Didn't know how to handle what first.
And I think that you brought up the expositional dialogue. It's there's a lot of it. And it was the mm-hmm. first thing that I noticed when we got into the show. And again, in a first episode, I'm like, okay, I'll give it a pass because they got to set stuff up, and I get it. Mm-hmm. But it kind of doesn't stop. And, you know, we've gotten some really great translations from one medium to another. I think even from Netflix, and I know it's animated, but Scott Pilgrim Takes Off, or if we go out of the animated route from animated to live action, I know you really enjoyed One Piece.
One Piece was fantastic.
With Netflix,
yeah. Oh,
right?
Yeah.
And so it's like watching.
Umbrella Academy is great too.
Umbrella
Dirk
Academy.
Gently. Like there were yeah. so many good adaptations that they've done from one medium to another. And
yeah.
it's just.
Yeah.
This one falls a bit short.
And it's funny because like I could see all the pieces. Like I could see all the good things
mm-hmm.
and it's just how it was sort of put together that it didn't quite work. I think it's, you know, we brought up the mystery of the week element as well. And to me, at first when they started doing that, I was like, I don't know how I feel about this. And then as soon as I started feeling like, actually I'm kind of liking the mystery of the week thing, it kind of felt like it took a back seat, and they mm-hmm. they sort of take it away from you. And to me, it's like, you know, I think back to a show like Supernatural, where that is very much sort of the thing. But I mean, that was back in an age of television when they, you know, they knew they were getting a certain amount of episodes. They knew they were getting a mm-hmm. certain amount of seasons, so they could spread out those backstory elements and those little key elements that they sort of sprinkle through, you know, quite significantly. But here it's just sort of all, it's just shoved in your face.
Very heavy-handed.
Yeah.
Very heavy-handed.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the other thing too, is the, I want to say subplot again, the basically what I'm trying to say is they trickle in pieces throughout the show where you're sort of thinking to yourself, like, is this going to have a payoff? And then even when it does, it's not rewarding. Like, it's kind of like you're kind of just sitting there like, oh, okay, that's why they strung that little point along,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, they were just trying to explain like a final little, like to kind of tie off all their loose ends before they even get to the end. It felt like that's what they were doing by just,
yeah.
I don't know. It's, yeah, the writing on this show just falls short in a lot of ways. Because like you said, you see so much good. You can see the potential that there was there in this story and in the world. But just the way that it was dealt with and the pace that they fly along with at times, you're just like, I feel like you could, you're missing the point right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought the music was whimsical, mm-hmm. and fit the tone of the show. But yeah, it is tough to, again, like you said, to like, there were just so many moments where I was like, I want to know what the characters are up to. And I want to know, you know, how do the characters play out, but I'm just not, it shouldn't take me, you know, enough effort to want to click back into the next episode.
Yeah, it shouldn't be like, I guess so. You should want to do that. And unfortunately, the characters are like the only thing that you might want to keep going back for.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of all I have without, obviously, we're not going to get into spoilers or anything like that. But, you know, basically what I'm saying is, if you enjoyed Sandman, there are parts to like about this, but if not, this I don't know if this is going to do anything for you. Maybe read the comics. Yeah,
it's a delightful little shoujo manga that where the boys have to cross dress and go into a girls' school. That is an adorable little read, and it's okay. So much fun.
All right, well there you go. That's our actual recommendation. But Dersey, I want to know your final score for this. First season of Dead Boy Detectives on a scale of 1 to 5 restless spirits.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think I've said everything I had to say about this show. The characters are the only reason why I'd recommend watching it, because we're getting some great performances for some relatively unknown actors, and I can't wait to see where they go if there's not a second season. Mm-hmm. But yes, this one, again, the story falls short. The characters are great. Some of those locations pull you right in, and then some of those locations do take you a bit out of it. But it's you can see what they're going for. And for that, I'll be giving them 3 out of 5 restless spirits.
Yeah, I think it's funny because I went back and checked my notes for The Sandman because I was like, oh, what did I give that? And I gave it a 3.5. And I think I gave it a 3.5 at the time because there are some incredibly solid bottle episodes in that season, in that first mm-hmm. season, that just kind of like blew me away so much that I was like, and that's just Neil Gaiman's, mostly his writing more than anything. yeah. And I think there was just, they kind of pulled these stories out of nowhere, but they're from the world, but they just sort of felt like they came out of nowhere. And so, you know, I think that those episodes dealt more with the world of Sandman more than the main plot. And I think that's where this show could have benefited as well. I think the idea of solving, you know, a new mystery each week, I think they could have stayed more with that throughout the season. But again, maybe they weren't sure if they were going to get another season, so they just had to put all that backstory in there. And again, I think in a book series that you can take as much time as you want, right? Mm-hmm. But not so much on TV. So I think there's just something that was lost in translation there. And again, the cast is great. The music's good. The ideas presented are solid. I wish they could have taken more time with it. And I hope that if we do get a season 2, that maybe they are able to, you know, kind of move beyond the traumatic things that we have to kind of explore, or that we explore in this season. Not that we have to, but that we're kind of forced to.
Forced to, along with, again, what was the main plot.
Right.
Again, they split the show too much.
Yeah, yeah. So I want to, again, because of these characters, and especially a character like Nico, like, I'd love to see more going forward of these characters. So I'm going to give Dead Boy Detectives a 3 out of 5 restless spirits. But yeah, here's hoping Neil and Netflix will go for it. But again, it's tough to say with Netflix, you know? And I never know whether we're going to actually see a season 2 of these things or not, but yeah, that is it for this review of Dead Boy Detectives season 1. We hope you enjoyed it, and if you did, make sure to subscribe to us wherever you like to listen to podcasts, if you haven't already. And if you want to write into the show with your thoughts on this series or any of the shows or movies we cover, well, you don't need a Ouija board. Instead, Dersey, can you let our still living listeners know how they can reach us beyond the grave?
For sure. They can reach us at wearegeekcentric@gmail.com. That's wearegeekcentric@gmail.com. Or if that's too much like waiting for us to die so you can reach us on the other side, you can get us on Twitter at Geekcentric YT or Instagram at We Are Geekcentric.
Keep in mind, we have a ton of other great episodes covering the latest in movies and TV shows, including our recent spoiler-free reviews for Prime Video's Fallout, Alex Garland's Civil War, Monkey Man, Three Body Problem, X-Men 97, Invincible Season 2 Part 2, and Dune Part 2. We also have our ongoing watch club for the final season of Star Wars, The Bad Batch. Our latest episode covering episode 13 is out, so be sure to join our Discord using the link in our description. We'll have our episode 14 thoughts out pretty soon as if you when you're listening to this. And if you want to chime in with your thoughts on this final season or anything else we've covered, again, join that Discord. Let us know what you're thinking. And we've got some great interviews out now, like our most recent interview with executive producer of the Apple original series Sugar, Simon Kinberg. Justin sat down and talked to him about this series that pays homage to classic film noir while also giving audiences something fresh. And as a self-proclaimed geek, Simon also talks a little bit about the X-Men, says what he kind of is thinking about for the X-Men and what he hopes to see. So go check out that interview and all of our interviews, both here on your podcast service of choice or over on YouTube at youtube.com/geekcentric. Again, subscribe, leave a review. It helps us so very much. We got a ton of things on the way that I'm very excited about all this month, next month, the next month after that. There's a lot of stuff happening in the world of all things geek-centric. So join us so that we can cover that for you. Darcy, thank you so much for joining me for this spooky, spoilery-free. I think I was inhabited by a ghost there that wanted us to talk about spoilers. But thank you so much. And as we say, love ya.
Laters.